This is the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como. We're sponsored by Enterprise Capital, your one-stop for business and business partner for financing commercial real estate, as well as all your commercial business needs. I hope you've had a great week. It was, unfortunately for many of you in the Northeast, very cold, lots of snow. I've got a number of in-laws. In fact, all my in-laws live in the Northeast, and I feel really bad being based down here in Dallas, Texas, that we don't have 1 inch of snow, and they're trying to dig themselves out of multiple feet of snow. So I do, our thoughts and prayers are with you as you folks try to dig out of the winter wonderland there. I know it's beautiful if you like to ski, but not necessarily the one thing you want to be focused on if you're just trying to get to work. And it's definitely been interesting to see in some areas, actually, while they're trying to dig out of the snow, they have so much of it that they've actually, and from what I've heard, they've actually relegated themselves to dumping the snow into the ocean because there's literally no place to put it. So at some point, I'm sure it's going to be even a bigger problem when it starts to thaw out for certain areas that might cause flooding. But definitely, if for those in California who also went through my other family who's from the West Coast, they needed the rain, and instead of giving it in droves that didn't cause flooding, they got a lot of rain and a lot of wind. And so for the Northeast and on the West Coast, it was a lot of extreme weather. So fortunately, for those of you that were stuck at home, maybe you had a chance to listen to the show and some of our other podcasters on the eWomen Network, because we're definitely here for you when you need to download us on demand and listen to us. So for us, definitely follow us on our social media sites. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/MonaLisaPowerLunch. You can also follow us on Twitter, and it's at MonaLisa.com. At MonaLisaComo. I used to always use the .com as a shortcut there. And we're also on Google+. You can also find all of our information on social media on our website at www.ewnradionetwork.com/power-lunch. And you can also listen to us on demand or get any of our podcasts on demand. So we're on all of the stores. We're for free. Absolutely, we don't believe in charging for our shows or for the app. So you can download the Power Lunch app on the Apple Store, Google Plus Store, and we're also on Amazon. And you can also listen to us on iTunes. If you go to the iTunes podcast and just search Power Lunch, you'll see our logo and our icon, and you'll see us there. So our week, when we were going through the content to take a look at what was going on in the world, we wanted to give you a little bit of flavor of things that we haven't reported on, which was specifically women in sports. There's a lot of great things that are going on with women in the area of sports, and wanted to focus a little bit on that later on in the segment. But there were a lot of great women and powerhouse women that continue to just literally move the world forward and also lay the foundation for other great women that are coming up in the ranks. I specifically wanted to call out yesterday, I was fortunate enough to be and honored to be asked to be a panelist for the Texas Wall Street Women Group here in Dallas. And they had asked me to be a speaker on one of their series yesterday that was called A Peek Inside the C-Suite. And the intent with this event was to bring in other women, much like a networking event, and very much so. We had great dinner over at Javier's in Dallas. If you've never been there, they've got a great cigar bar. I'm a cigar smoker, so huge on the Javier's cigar area, but the food is fantastic. Well, anyhow, the event was very well attended, probably one of the best attended networking events that I've seen. That's not one of the flagships that we do annually. And I've been a member of the Texas Wall Street Women now for about 4 years. Met some absolutely wonderful women. But what was interesting was the variety and the range of questions that had come to the table. So all of these women came. Many of them, in fairness, could have also been panelists, because a number of them were definitively C-suite executives in their own right, but they also came just to network. And the event was put on by a number of great women. Christine Breck, who I was introduced to Texas Wall Street Women 4 to 5 years ago, she's actually based out of Austin and the head and one of the founders of Texas Wall Street Women at the state level. And she, the chapter here in Dallas was put on by Sally Benke from Morgan Stanley, and a number of other great women who were there, and I'll just call them out because they were wonderful. Claire Darr, she's a managing director from Newhouse and Noblin, which is a legal and executive recruiting firm. Heather Gilker, she was the MC last night, absolutely phenomenal woman. She's a vice president of business development for the Fidelity Family Office investment company out here in Dallas, so the very large office. Jerry Hammer was also there. She's a partner of the Individual Tax and Advisory Group at Travis Wolf LLP. Trisha Linderman, wonderful woman, executive vice president of recruiting and marketing for Texas Capital Bank. And Emily Parker, I definitely enjoyed her speech. She's the managing partner of the law firm Thompson & Knight. Very strong, very, very great advice that she gave. And last but not least, Patty Pickard is the senior director of finance of Salesmanship Club here out in Dallas as well. So we had a wonderful opportunity, just myself and these several other ladies, to actually engage with a number of women in the room. And fortunately, the women that were seated at my table that I could have an intimate conversation with, the conversation ranged from, you know, your traditional questions on work-life balance to other questions which were for women who are rising in the ranks. I have a female boss and I want to know how to move my career forward, but I'm starting to find it difficult, or I at least see that she's treats me different than my male counterparts. And I was very candid, and I always am candid with, you know, you folks here on the radio station, as well as just in general the women that I mentor. If you've ever either had the blessing or the unfortunate task of getting mentorship feedback from me, I mentor the way I prefer to be mentored, and that's pretty straightforward. And the first thing I said is, number one, one of the ladies asked me, what exactly, when it comes to mentoring, you know, how do you mentor? And anyone who's ever been with me will tell you, I don't deal with whiners. And I say that up front because if you want to have a counselor to talk to you and walk you through the whys and the nots, I'm not that person for you. But if you really want to have a constructive discussion on how to better your personality and how to move your career forward from an outside perspective, which is what a mentor is supposed to do, absolutely would love to help you. The other thing that I love to do for the ladies that I mentor, and ladies and men, so I can be fair there, is being an advocate for them. So wherever I can help them be an advocate to either within their company or influencers within their company, I think that's a huge benefit. And one of the ladies had mentioned, Claire specifically, Dar, is that your advocates aren't necessarily your mentors, and it is important to notice the difference between the two. And I agree with that. Well, anyhow, going back to the conversation, I wanted to share it before we got into the news. There were a lot of great nuggets of questions that I wanted to share on our show that I feel is important when it comes to women who want to get themselves in the C-suite. And the first thing is advice that I had given to everybody in the room is my personal belief, and I've learned this from the hard way, is that we as women tend to be a little bit more heads down focused, which is great. But we want to be the one who takes all the projects, works the 14 to 16 hours if we can, working after hours. And the truth is, and this goes with women and men, but I see this a little bit more with women who are struggling and moving their careers forward, is number one, you cannot get ahead if you're pulling 14-hour days. And one lady corrected me and said, well, in law firms and consulting firms and accounting firms, that's not necessarily the case. I agree that you have to work hard. That's the first thing. Working hard is not something that you shouldn't do, but not making time and not time management is the key. And I meant that and I brought that up because there were, as you move your career forward, men and women, if you think that the only way you can get ahead is to be focused on your job 100% and you don't get out and network and you're not going to conferences and you're not sitting on panels and you're not doing sales events and you're not shaking hands and kissing babies with clients and with vendors, and if you're not getting out of the office and networking with your boss or your coworkers or even possibly future bosses and you're just 100% committed to the machine of giving work and hoping that it's going to come out and pay you back. I can promise you it works for you in middle management. But if your goal is to get into the C-suite, you want to be a CEO, you want to be a CFO, you want to be an executive vice president, you want to get into the executive suites, you're not going to get there doing that, because it's viewed that, number one, there's not enough confidence in your ability to leave the office. Number two, it's viewed as you're incapable of surrounding yourself by people that could make you successful. And what I mean by that is that means that you are a single point of failure. Because if the only way that the company can survive is by you pulling 14 hours a day and not taking vacations and checking on vacations, then you become a single point of failure, and therefore you're the problem, not the company, because you've not taken the time to find great talent, surround yourself by great talent, hire that great talent, and then ensure that there is legacy so that when you step out of the office or you're in a meeting and you can't deal with the pressing matter, that you've surrounded yourself by great talent that can actually help get the job done. And I see too many women and men make the problems in middle management trying to get into senior management and executive management, that they're too concerned about surrounding themselves by really talented people or smarter people because of the fear of not getting the position. And so my second piece of advice is the only way you can get into the C-suite is with a strong team. And that's that. And even if you're getting hired into a C-suite position, so say you're coming in from the outside, you have to show the discipline of talent management and being able to inherit a team that has a legacy process and be able to either identify who is great and make them better, or who is not in the right position and find them the right places to be within the organization, or make some tough calls if somebody is truly disruptive to the organization. But at the C level, you have to be able to delegate, manage your time, and definitively surround yourself by the smartest people in the room. And one of the great mentoring sessions I received early on in Wall Street was my boss had said, I'm here in my seat because I hire people like you, Mona Lisa. My job is to hire the smartest people in the room, not people that can do what I do, but people who can do more than what I can do. And that's the second. The last piece of advice that I would give and that I gave that I wanted to share with the team is specifically to women when it comes to work-life balance. I'm a strong believer in compartmentalizing, and it's easier to say for me after doing it for so many years, but I think it's great advice for men and for women when it comes to the personal front. You have to be able to compartmentalize and be in the moment at work. But at the same token, when you're at home, you have to, in order to keep a work-life balance and have a healthy relationship at home, and my husband and I practice this quite a bit, is you have to turn off. Because you owe that to your family, you owe that to your loved ones, you owe that to your friends, you owe that to your nonprofits that you're working with. When you're not engaged at work, when you're off, you're off. That's not to say that you can't check in with work and make sure that there isn't something going on and you know, the house is not on fire. That should only be random. But in general, if you don't have the opportunity to recharge and balance your life so that you can give back to those who really do matter at the end of the day, that keep you emotionally fit and mentally fit, then it's harder for you to come and give 100% at work. And anyone who's been through a personal situation, whether it's a difficult relationship at home, whether it's parenting, whether it's taking care of your parents, you know that you cannot give it 110% if your heart and your mind is in someplace else. So that goes even to the basic things. So for the mothers out there, and I had a young lady at my table saying, so what do you do with young kids? What worked for me, it was a timing thing. When I was pregnant and when I had younger kids, I literally had to say to myself, the most important thing for me at this moment is being there and being available more hours than I can and want to give, and I will have to take and pass on any promotions at this time, knowing full well that I would give it the extra once the kids were older. And so that's difficult to do when you're trying to balance work and family. It's possible, and fortunately, companies are far more susceptible to an understanding about breaking away and giving people time off. I would just say, especially since I hear about this all the time, the United States has the most unused PTO hours across the board. If you as an executive and a leader can take the lead and show that it is healthy to take time off, not check in every hour and every day while you're on vacation. You actually drive the culture of creating an environment where your staff can be healthy as well. So just little bits of advice that I wanted to share with that came from the event yesterday. Lots of great women. If you're out here in Texas, I definitely encourage you to join Texas Wall Street Women for the networking groups. Another great group to join nationally across the United States is 100 Women in Hedge Funds, and then another great networking group that's not specifically focused on financial services, I just know these groups fairly well, is Elevate. And it used to be financially driven. It was definitively part of the 85 Broad Group until Sally Krawcheck bought it and called it Elevate. And so there should be an Elevate chapter in all the major cities, great networking opportunities for women across the board. So I definitely encourage women to get out there and network, you know, offer your capabilities of if you're in an executive level or even just if you feel you've got great advice, put yourself out there, make sure that you get out to help other women across your industry so that hopefully it makes it easier for the next generation of women. Another thing before we go to break is I started talking about this last week, and it's a program, a campaign that I'm very passionate about. If you've not heard about them, they're called plaidforwomen.com, and it's kind of like a blogging site or a social media site specifically for women. And the intent of the site is to help women achieve goals, get connected, and be heard. So it's a great media and blogging site. It's called the Business of Life site for women. And I've just recently joined it, and I'm a huge fan of it. Well, the one thing that I'm going to continue to tweet about, and you're going to see this if you're following us on Twitter, which I encourage, is their campaign called hashtag No Mean Girls Campaign. And I say get involved with it because this thing is going to have, it has legs, and it's definitely going to be big, and I applaud the Plaid for Women group because I do know for a fact that this campaign is something that all women can relate to. And I started talking about it at the event yesterday, and it was amazing how many women jumped up on it. So the hashtag No Mean Girls campaign is about stopping the psychological violence that we women inflict on one another via being mean girls and using our superpowers, our superpower women powers for good. So what does that mean? Mean girls gossip about each other. The No Mean Girls campaign says we don't listen to gossip and we don't participate or perpetuate in destructive rumors specifically about other women. The other point, mean girls criticize based on looks. The No Mean Girls campaign says we look to find the talent and the character and the motivation inside of each woman. Third bullet is mean girls exclude other women. I hate this. I really, really hate this, which is why I encourage networking events so that women could get better at networking instead of being so exclusive. No Mean Girls campaign means we find ways to include other women in the business, in our business and personal lives. Fourth bullet, mean girls enjoy when other women fail. Another pet peeve of mine. It's like the crab mentality. The No Mean Girls campaign, we find ways to be supportive in failure and celebrate successes. And lastly, mean girls enjoy when other women fail. Well, Plaid for Women, as well as the No Mean Girls campaign, we have to be supportive in failure and celebrate successes, but we also fear other women's successes. So we need to help other women succeed even if they surpass us. So plaidforwomen.com launched this initiative in response to the overwhelming feedback that they've received from women across the country who've resonated with this message. So go to their website. You can get one of their badges to put on your website. You can get one of their badges to actually tweet out or put on Instagram or on Pinterest. But definitively, something that all of us women and men, if you could definitely help us out here, the No Mean Girls campaign is something that we women have to do for each other and do with each other to ensure that we are not perpetuating the crab mentality and pulling women down. We've got to help, and just like we say on the eWomen Network, we have to elevate and help them rise. So when we get back, we're going to go to the Women of the Week. We've had a lot of great women headliners. We're going to talk a little bit about women in sports because we don't give that enough street cred that is due for all of the phenomenal women that are making headlines in the world of sports. More when we return.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@eWomenNetwork.com. That's managingdirector@eWomenNetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at InterParis Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does. Whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At InterParis Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como. Our show is sponsored by InterParis Capital, your business partner for commercial real estate and all your business financing needs. Welcome back to our week of women that made the headlines. We had a lot of great women, from women in business to women on the world politics, as well as women in sports. So let's get started.
Let's go, girls.
Come on. I love that opener. So we're going to start off on the world news front. The most powerful woman in the world, if you haven't known her by now, is Angela Merkel. She is by far the most, she's been voted by Forbes as the most powerful woman in the world. The Chancellor of Germany has done a phenomenal job of trying to keep her stance on the world front. But in the past week, it's been impressive as she's actually been traveling about over 12,000 miles in the past week alone for a diplomacy. And Ms. Merkel, if I'm correct, one of the main reasons that she spent so much time on the world front is she was actually concerned there was a lot of world political issues that's been going on. And Ms. Merkel, the powerhouse in Germany, obviously being head of the EU because they have the strongest economy, but also from the global standpoint for where Germany stands has been very impressive. So I'm going to take one of the stories that we took from, I think it was from NBC News. German Chancellor looked at one of she has an entourage of folks that travel with her. Well, the media outlets were absolutely in awe this past week because the 60-year-old politician was facing tough negotiations with Greece. If you haven't been paying attention to what's been going on in Greece, there's been a vote by the Greek parliament on whether or not they want to stay as part of the EU because there's been tough sanctions that have been put upon them in order for the EU to continue to help them with their currency and their economic situation. Well, if they leave, of course, that creates other issues. But German Chancellor has been trying very hard to kind of play the diplomat and the peacemaker and negotiator with all of the European Union countries. Well, again, the 60-year-old was facing tough negotiations with Greece over the country's bailout package. She just flew in from Belarus, where Merkel had been engaged in a complicated 17-hour overnight negotiations with Ukraine for a ceasefire. So that alone was amazing because of how much that she was doing just on the European front. Developed newspaper in Germany, one of the biggest publications there, heralded Merkel's unbelievable marathon program, and the news agency described the chancellor as the diplomatic week between war and peace. And they also illustrated her tiring itinerary in a graphic, and I have it in front of me. I speak German, so this was easier enough for me to kind of follow along. The graphic shows the German chancellor's monster travel week, and in one day she's been in, let's see, she was in Kyiv, then she went to Berlin on Friday. So Thursday she was in Kyiv, Friday she was in Berlin, the latter part of the third day she was in Moscow, then she was back in Berlin, then went to Minsk, then she went to Brussels, then she went to the United States, and then back to Europe to have discussions. So over the course of only 1 week, the German leader had traveled again to all of these countries, and then she went back to the Munich Security Conference on Saturday. So that was just in the course of 3 days. The visit to the Bavarian capital was only an interim stop before heading back over to the Atlantic to Washington, D.C. on Sunday for negotiations with President Barack Obama on Monday. That was just earlier this week. Her meeting schedule was kept tight so she could include a trip to Ottawa, Canada. Why not? That same day while she went to D.C. ahead of an evening flight, then back to Berlin. But that wasn't enough. On Wednesday, Merkel attended a commemoration ceremony for former German President Richard von Weizsäcker before heading out to Minsk, Belarus again, where all-night diplomacy left her without sleep. In a rare interview about her private life, Merkel was asked whether she needs only 4 hours of sleep. Her response, "No, but I have a certain camel-like quality. I have a certain storage capacity, but then I have to recharge again." In an attempt to explain the mystery surrounding Ms. Merkel's endurance, the newspaper Die Welt actually wrote that Merkel's fitness secret has been known for years and is very simple. There is none. The German weekly magazine Focus also wrote about her. Again, she's the most powerful woman in the world. Estimated that Ms. Merkel traveled, again, 12,500 miles just in this past week, describing the world's most powerful woman as being of robust nature. Her power of concentration rises with the challenges, the Focus magazine quoted an unnamed member of her circle saying. One of her entourage folks who wanted to go unnamed was quoted saying, "If you promise not to tell Miss Merkel, I will admit that sometimes after a trip with her, when I awake from my coma back home, I wake up and see her on the news already in another town in a different time zone, wondering how does she pull that off." So Miss Merkel, again, at the head of the forefront, you know, powerhouse woman, 60 years old. She's out there doing great things to try to put, and in fairness, she's probably the strongest diplomatic personality that we have there. And my own criticism, I don't think that the UN is playing a strong enough part in terms of diplomacy. No other countries, including the U.S., we have enough problems going on back here at home and on the international front and with our disagreements with Israel and our terrorist issues with the ISIS and the Arab world. Nonetheless, the issues that we have with President Putin, Merkel is seen and viewed and respected by many within the industry as somebody who really truly does care about seeing a more calmer and more unified global world. And that is in the area of the third world countries to peace negotiations amongst the Western world as well as the first world countries. So not a surprise that Ms. Merkel made the news again, and I'm sure we'll continue to see as she plays her diplomatic hat in the weeks to come. The next woman who made the headlines is Maria Contreras Sweet. If you don't know her, definitely a woman powerhouse to know. She is the chief administrator. The head title is administrator of the Small Business Association, and it's great. She doesn't get a lot of press for it, but the head of the SBA, especially for many of you women who are small business owners, it's very important to know who this woman is because she is so significant on the small business front. Well, the headline there is the SBA, it was announced today, actually yesterday, that the SBA will be turning to credit unions to boost small loans to small businesses. We took this from the Business Journal from Kent Hoover. The Small Business Administration is enlisting credit unions in its fight for more small dollar business loans, which is a very untouched area, not as big. The SBA signed a three-year agreement with the National Credit Union Administration to make more credit unions aware of the SBA's lending programs through webinars, examiner training, and data resources. This partnership could boost the SBA's efforts to serve business owners and potential entrepreneurs in communities that are underserved by traditional banks. Boosting businesses in these communities through small dollar loans is a top priority for SBA Administrator Maria Contreras-Sweet. So far this year, 61% of the agency's flagship 7A SBA loans have been for $150,000 or less, which is up 58% from a year ago. Credit unions are a natural fit for these types of SBA loans, Contreras-Sweet said. Millions of Americans have used their credit union to finance their car, home, or children's education. We want to empower credit unions to finance small business startups as well. Credit unions are a good fit for reaching underserved communities, such as minority business owners, because some of the nation's most trusted mission-based lenders are these credit unions. Credit unions already are minor players in the SBA lending. I know this for a fact with our company, Interpars Capital, because of the majority of the lenders and because of the capital that they have and the restrictions with credit unions, they are not allowed to lend as much. Well, just to kind of further that statistic, in fiscal 2014, credit unions made $303 million in loans to the SBA's 7A loan program, which I had mentioned, which is up from $263 million the previous year. But that was just a small fraction of the SBA's 7A program, which is about $19 billion. So that shows you that they're not even a close to a quarter. I mean, they're not even on the blip, the credit unions are, when it comes to financing small business loans. And the truth is many, many, many small business owners get better checking accounts, they get better incentives and better fees in working with a local regional bank if you're a business owner, and many of you know this. And that's not to say that I'm not an advocate for the J.P. Morgan Chase banks as well as the B of A's and the Wells Fargo who have great programs. But these smaller, and I encourage a lot of business owners to look at them as well, there's a lot of benefits that you get with these smaller banks, these regional banks that are only within your community, or these the community banks as well as the credit unions, because they have more flexibility in moving around what the criteria is. And the truth is their charter is based upon the demographics of a person within their community. So if you have a credit union, for instance, and you're in the American Airlines Credit Union, which is very popular out here in Dallas, well, of course, they're only lending to the American Airlines employees. And so I encourage many business owners, and I think it's a great thing for just your average customer, always get a credit union if you can qualify for it, but also your local community banks, again, because their charters and their criteria will be less stringent because they have to only apply to the local area that's within their charter. So, again, back to what Maria Contreras-Sweet is doing, is giving more visibility to credit unions. But it's also coming with a little bit of a scrutiny, and obviously the big banks are fighting this. There are nearly 6,600 federally insured credit unions. If 1,000 of them made 10 additional SB loans of $50,000, that would boost lending to small businesses by $500 million. And so the chairman, Debbie Matz from the NCUA, stated there is a vast untapped capacity for credit unions to make more SBA loans. This initiative by Maria Contreras-Sweet and the SBA will help us unlock that capacity and put it to work for credit unions, their members, and their communities. Well, Congress, as I stated earlier, restricts the amount of business lending that credit unions can do to 12% of their total assets. So if you think about it, your typical credit union probably has a balance sheet for lending probably less than, I don't know, $5 to $10 million, because that's a decent-sized credit union. If they can only do 12%, then you're obviously, if you want a $150,000 SBA loan, there's not a lot of those that your credit union is going to be doing, but $50,000, they can do several of them. Well, credit unions have been pushing Congress to raise the cap, contending it limits their ability, obviously, to serve small businesses and discourages many credit unions from even going into business lending. Lobbying by large bank groups that, as I had mentioned, have kept this legislation from passing. But loans of $50,000 or under don't count toward the business lending gap, and also the government-guaranteed portion of SBA loans don't count toward the cap as well. So the SBA guarantees the range from 50% to 90% of each part of the principal SBA loan. Contreras-Sweet, quoted, was thinking... stated that credit unions could be a good source of financing for encore entrepreneurs, people who've worked all their lives in one career and who decide to strike it out on their own. The SBA will backstop the loans, and credit unions' long-term relationships with their members will put them in an ideal position to assess their character and creditworthiness. So that, again, we took that article directly out of the Business Journal from Kent Hoover. A little bit more about Maria Contreras-Sweet. I'm a huge fan of women like herself who just continue to blaze trails. She's the 24th administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administration. She is a member of President Obama's cabinet. She joined it only a year ago, not even a year ago. It was April 7th of last year. She's an entrepreneur, a business executive, and she was also formerly a state cabinet official. So this is a woman who knows multiple, she's served in multiple capacities of executive, CEO, entrepreneur, as well as somebody who's worked in the civic sector for politics as well. So great to see that she's pushing more towards the SBA, but I'm going to venture a little bit more off that. Last week we talked about the article about women in Silicon Valley and getting financing from venture capitalists. And so I figured I'd add the other article that we pulled was regarding Babson's College on venture capital funding for women entrepreneurs. And so the reason why I bring this up is while there's definitely the SBA route of getting financing from the government, there's also venture capital, and that's an area that tends to be very male-focused and male-dominated. Well, one of the key findings, and it feels that way, but I wanted to kind of highlight where there's an opportunity here, is Babson College, the study that they released on venture capital for women entrepreneurs, I think, really gets to the point of how far we've come, but also how much more opportunity there is. And so I'll read a couple of bullets from the study that they've done over the last 3 years. So since 1999, entrepreneurs have made considerable progress in obtaining venture capital. However, a wide gender gap persists. The amount of early-stage investment companies with a woman on the executive team has tripled to 15% from 5% in the last 15 years. So that's a little depressing because it's taken us 15 years to only get to 15%, but ladies, we're going to definitely challenge ourselves. No mean girls, we're all going to help each other to get to that next level. And despite this positive trend, 85% of all venture capital funded businesses have no women on the executive team. Only 2.7% of venture capital funded companies had a woman CEO. Now here's the other part that tells you that we have to invest in women. Although businesses with a woman on the executive team are more likely to have higher valuations at both first and last funding. In fact, 64% higher valuations and 49% higher valuations respectively. The composition of venture capital firms also matters for women entrepreneurs. And this is another area that I'm hoping to give highlight to for all of you wealthy women out there who are blessed and are looking for areas to invest in. I highly encourage you to look at joining a venture capital fund, or if you're in a family office and you have the funding, definitely it's something that you're going to feel really good about. But more importantly, you get to help another female entrepreneur grow her business. Well, venture capital firms with women partners are more than twice as likely to invest in companies with a woman on the executive team. In fact, 34% of firms with a woman partner compared to 13% of firms without a woman partner, and more than three times as likely to invest in companies with a woman CEOs, and that's 58% of firms with women partners versus 15% without. So last week we talked a lot about the Newsweek article, which was very gut-wrenching, and a lot of people didn't like the article, but Newsweek has it for the February issue about how Silicon Valley views women. What was important to note, though, for that article, though, is that the numbers about women being invested, and it also highlights that there's a growing number of women venture capital funds. I know of a few great ones, and have interviewed them on the show, that are focused on specifically funds for female entrepreneurs. And that's great because you also have a woman mentor or a group of women or women and men on the venture capital side that see benefit in investing in female entrepreneurs. Well, there's a downside to it. There is still a declining number of women, as based on the article as well, that are decision makers in this venture capital community. The total number of women partners in venture capital firms has declined significantly, dropping to 6% from 10%. So we're kind of going the wrong way. So it's an enormous untapped investment opportunity for women entrepreneurs. And I also wanted to highlight one more thing out there before we kind of wrap it up on the business segment. Now, Babson actually it sponsors a project, and I think it's really cute. The name itself, the Diana Project, and I probably shouldn't have used the word cute, but the Diana, specifically because if you look at the logo, it is a Greek goddess. And Diana, the Greek mythology goddess, and I was a big fan of mythology growing up, but she's the goddess of the hunt, the moon, and birthing, being associated with wild animals and woodland, and having the power to talk and control animals. I just stole this from Wiki. But she was one of the three main goddesses, Diana, Minerva, and Vesta, who never swore to marry, and she was also the twin of Apollo. Of the island of the daughter of Jupiter and Latona. So not that you really cared to get any of your Greek mythology in today, but the Diana Project that's being sponsored over at the Babson College, I think is a very, I call it out because I think it's something that definitely women should take a look at. It engages in research activities, forums, and scholarships focusing on women entrepreneurs and their growth. So for you women entrepreneurs out there, take a look at the Diana Project, which is sponsored by Babson College. And there's more information out there if you go to the babson.edu and then, or just look up Diana Project. I'm not exactly sure when it's coming out. Here it is. Diana International Research Conference. It will be at Babson College in Wellesley, Massachusetts, June 8th through 9th this year, so 2 days. And the theme is women entrepreneurs in the ecosystems. So we're going to try to see if we can get somebody from the Babson College interviewed specifically for the Diana Project. We would love to either have Professors Brush, Carter, Gatewood, or Green, or Hart, since they're the founders of this Diana Project. But I think it would be really great to get some insight since they've been working on this for several years. Well, that's all we have on the business. There were a lot of women. If you go to bizwomen.com under the business journals, we always go there to take a look at content. Carly Fiorino beefs up her international resume, was one of the highlights. The Food Babe Under Attack explains herself. The Hidden Powers of Fantasy Football, how a workplace draft saved her from office burnout. There's a lot of great women that have made the headlines in Biz Women Business Journals. Does a great job, and their editor as well as their reporters do literally scrub the internet and find some really great content for us as well as for many folks that just want to get kind of the newsletter information download for the week. So when we get back, we're going to talk about women in sports and definitely where these women are coming from and what are the glass ceilings and why tennis, believe it or not, it shouldn't be a surprise, is the most loved and highest paid female sport, and women are breaking glass ceilings all across there. So more when we return.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who've been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at InterParis Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1155. 1930. At Interpares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, sponsored by Interpares Capital, your one-stop for business partner and your one-stop business partner for all your commercial finance needs. When we left, we gave you some women headliners for the week on the world front as well as on the small business front as well. And we also gave you some great information about a project that we just looked at called the Diana Project, which is something we definitely encourage any women entrepreneurs who are looking for some great content and great research on the plight of women entrepreneurs and just kind of want to look into that. It's going to be held at Babson College June 8th and 9th this year. And the other thing that I wanted to make sure that we highlighted was the No Mean Girls hashtag campaign that's sponsored by Plaid for Women. Still haven't told them that I'm doing this for them. It's absolutely free advertising for them because it's something that I'm extremely passionate about. Well, when we started the segment, we talked a little bit about women in sports, and we're featuring a women in sports for a little bit. There's quite a bit of number of women that we could talk about that have blazed the trails, but there really isn't a lot of focus that has been done in the past about how these women have actually done quite a bit to make it easier for future women athletes. Well, the first what brought it up was, and it's amazing that this still is something that isn't very well known. Being a golf person and a part of a country club member, it still amazes me when I go to country clubs and it's very clear that women are not welcome in these parts of town. Well, this country club type of environment where it's specifically the old boys club, it literally dates back to our colonial history. Well, the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews back in the UK is one of the oldest and most prestigious golf clubs in the world, and it's possibly the oldest. Because of just the way things were instituted back in the 1700s. It's based on St. Andrews, Scotland, and is regarded as the worldwide home of golf. Formerly, it was one of the governing authorities of the game, but in 2004, this role was handed over to a newly formed group of companies collectively known as the R&A. And so the membership policy has been a men-only membership policy, but in 2012, former British Prime Minister Gordon Brown called the club to abandon this in favor of a non-discriminatory policy, as did the Vice Chancellor of the University of St. Andrews. On September 18, 2014, the club voted in favor of admitting female members. Ooh, lucky us. And in February 2015, the club's first female honorary members were announced: Princess Anne, Laura Davis, Renee Powell, Bella Robinson, Lally Segard, Anna Sorenstam, and Louis Suggs. At the time, the club also announced, in addition to the honorary members, a number of women have been admitted as members of the club, with more to follow in the following months. Well, it finally voted it in September. It wasn't until now that these wonderful ladies are actually able to attend this absolutely wonderful club. And Anna Sorenstam made headlines this past week when she tweeted out, "Thanks everybody for the nice tweets about the Royal and Ancients membership announcement today. I am very honored to be one of the lucky ladies." And I will read to you that wonderful announcement very short that came out this week from Peter Dawson, who's the secretary of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club. And the title is, "The Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews votes overwhelmingly to admit women as members. I am very pleased to announce that the membership of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews has voted overwhelmingly in favor of welcoming women members." Remember, they were voted in September. Still had to approve it. "More than three-quarters of the club's global membership took part in the ballot, with a decisive 85% voting for women to become members." That's impressive. "The vote has immediate effect, and I can confirm that the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews is now a mixed membership club." I'm sorry, that just sounds funny. It's a mixed membership club. That's a term that you wouldn't think. I mean, you could probably say co-ed, but whatever. The membership has also acted as to fast-track a significant initial number of women to become members in the coming months. This is a very important and positive day in the history of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club. The RNA has served the sport of golf well for 260 years, and I am confident that the club will continue to do so in the future with support of all of its members, both men and women. Well, so... in transparency, I am a Club Corp member, and that is one of the largest owners of private golf clubs and country clubs in the United States. I think they have something like 200. They're also headquartered here in Dallas. They are, fortunately, co-ed, or how does he say this, mixed membership. But it's interesting to see that it's taken so long for one of the oldest golf clubs, country clubs in the world, to actually admit women. And listen, I'm not going to call them out, but there are certain clubs still here in Dallas that are very progressive, but the men have their own dining area, God forbid. They mingle with this woman. They have their own dining area. And then in some places, there are country clubs that I've been to, again, not calling them out for fear of retribution, but there are country clubs out there that still put women tee times at a lesser advantage. And, you know, one of the women, a guest that I had several months ago, Pam Swenson, who's the CEO of EWGA, Executive Women's Golf Association, and I had also mentioned this yesterday at the event that I was at, Texas Wall Street Women, for the C-suite dinner, is that women also need to get more involved with golf. So it's definitely an area that's rising and definitely an area that's going to become more popular. Well, I digress to the overwhelmingly bigger topic of women in sports. And as I had stated earlier, it was interesting when I was reading the article about the Royal and Ancient's first female members and how big of a deal it was to announce it. And then we decided to say, okay, well, how big of it is, you know, let's kind of talk about women in sports. What is the most popular female sport? So, you know, I thought it might have been tennis, maybe it was golf. But it didn't dawn on me, like, what is the most popular sport out there? Well, it doesn't surprise me, especially as I drive through my neighborhood and every tennis court here in Texas now seems to be packed because the weather is so beautiful. And I apologize again to all of you Northeasterners or those of you in Canada who listen. It's nice enough to go outside out here in the southern parts of the U.S. and actually play tennis. Well, tennis is the most popular sport, and we did some research on it. And Time did an article on it last fall, Elena Dockerman. We always want to give credit where credit is due. And her article was why tennis is the most popular women's sport. And her background for this paper was actually interesting, and we'll read excerpts for it from you. More than any other sport, female tennis players have been gaining on men in terms of prize and money and skill, which is interesting because we also had Serena Williams, who just won last week the Australian Open, winning the 2015 Australian Open over Maria Sharapova, and how she's literally by far one of the highest paid tennis athletes in the world, and she's a female. That doesn't happen much. Well, men usually play the best of three on the circuit when it comes to tennis, but at the Open and other Grand Slam events, they play best of five, which is not so for women who still play best of three despite protests from players like Williams who believe they can do more. We see women as strong, ready, and willing and able, tournament favorite Williams told the New York Times. All the women players have agreed to do it, but it's not what the tournaments want at this time. Well, while it's a long shot that women's game will move to best of five set matches, which boggles my mind that they can't just change it, the five versus three debate is one of the final frontiers for women tennis players striving for equality in the sport. Women tennis players earn more money, endorsements, and TV face time than any other female athletes, and they've been gaining on their male counterparts in terms of prize money and skill. Since 2007, when Wimbledon and the French Open joined the other two Grand Slams in the offering equal prize money for men and women players, tennis has etched away at gender barriers. Yay! So congratulations to tennis on that. Well, should Williams hoist the winner's trophy again, she would take home a cool $4 million, the biggest paycheck ever for the winner, male or female, of a single tennis tournament, and that was at the U.S. Open last fall. And that's because her $3 million prize money would be augmented considerably by the fact that she won the U.S. Open Series, the North American tournaments led up to the final Grand Slam, which awards an extra $1 million if the winner goes on to take the U.S. Open. Last year, German player Sabina Lisicki hit a serve at 131 miles per hour, setting a new record for the fastest serve in women's tennis. Venus Williams previously had the record at 129 miles per hour. Holy crap, Ken, first off, is my comment. But that's still a far cry from the men's fastest serves ever recorded. Sam Groth at 163 miles per hour, followed by Andy Roddick at 149. That's still the speed at which Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal usually serve, and women are getting better. The top 10 fastest serves recorded in the World Tennis Association, the WTA, were all hit in the last 7 years. Scientists have posed many theories as to why women's serves becoming more powerful, but one thing is clear. It's not the rackets that are improving, it's the women. And so I went off a little bit part on that, but you know, let's talk a little bit about women in general in the world of sports. Women that exhibit skills that come close to those of men are considered an anomaly. Let's take, for instance, 13-year-old, do you remember that little leaguer pitcher, Monet Davis, made the cover of Sports Illustrated last fall for throwing baseball pitches as fast as the boys, 70 miles per hour. She's a cutie too, but she's an absolutely gracious young lady, and she was put on the media circuit, and she was far, far, far more mature over her years. Well, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban made headlines in 2013 when he said he might draft Brittany Griner, who dunked 18 times during her college career, a skill usually reserved for men. Holy crap, what? He might hire a female? And Danica Patrick gets as much coverage as superior male drivers simply because she's a woman competing in a male sport. Though the media has extolled Andy Murray for hiring former player Emilia Morisamo as a coach, the only woman listed on the coaching staff for a top 40 ranked player, the move has caused less of a stir than the San Antonio Spurs hiring Becky Hammon. That also happened last year. The first woman to coach during the NBA regular season, if only because the men and women's games are more similar in tennis than in basketball. Well, the article goes on to say, the sad fact is women are stuck playing sports originally designed for men. Basketball, football, baseball, hockey, lacrosse, volleyball, tennis, poker, NASCAR, and anything else you can think of were created during a time when women were expected to be at home preparing dinner and taking care of 6 children, while the men were out trying to get their balls into another team's holes, Rick Pallas argued in Vice last year. So instead of the winner of a sport contest being determined by skills that women excel in, an extremely small sample based on my own experiences, flexibility, agility, nimbleness, intelligence, and insane pain threshold, they were geared towards categories like I can push you further and I can jump you higher than you can jump, which is, I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, but that's what the article specifically Rick Paulus argued. Well, the consequences are that women's sports are not as popular as men's, and female athletes struggle more than men to get bigger endorsement deals, whether that's the LPGA, whether that's the WNBA, whether that's women's soccer, even though that seems to get more press in the United States than men's soccer. It doesn't matter if they're at the top of their field. It's still difficult for women athletes. Well, only 3 women cracked last year's Forbes 100 highest paid athletes list, and all 3, Maria Sharapova, Lia Na, and Serena Williams, guess what? They were all tennis players. And it's not that tennis is more lucrative than any other professional sports. It's only that 3 male tennis players made the list too. Women's tennis is just more popular than any other women's sport. So it's not just like superstars like Williams who are benefiting from the closing pay gap. A court's analysis of male versus female tennis player earnings found that there is a gap at the top of the pack. The top man, Roger Federer, has won $82 million from tournaments, while the top woman, Serena Williams, has earned $60 million. Things even out in the middle. Martina Hingis, the 11th highest earner in women's tennis, with $20 million from tournaments compared to $20.6 million earned by the men's 11th highest earner, Andy Roddick. So tennis tournaments have done more than just offer equal pay. The sport is structurally set up to give women an equal opportunity at drawing a crowd. They play at the same time as the men in the big tournaments, and nowadays networks will broadcast as many women's Grand Slam games as men's. That's the key, folks. It's when the media steps in and showcases women's sports as just as worthy enough for prime time. And then also when you've got companies that can help draw the crowd, whether it's the marketing or the products, if we can get them out there, then it's also going to help draw focus to women in the sports. Well, a lot of good news on that front as we continue down that. BNP Paribas opened, just announced this past week, and another women headliner, Serena Williams, Since she won the Australian Open just last week, BNP Paribas ticket sales went up 16% because Serena Williams is coming back. And so the gender gap is definitely decreasing in tennis, but for sports, whether it's women in basketball or women coaches or women athletes or women sports teams, there definitely is a gap that we need to cover. But we're also going to focus more on that. Every week we'll try to make sure that we do our due part and give highlights in women headliners, that we don't just focus on women in news and women in the media and women in entertainment, but that every week we also report to you women in sports. So hopefully that's our part in continuing to give you access to women trailblazers across the spectrum. But all of you women in sports, we love you out there as well, and we promise to make sure you're part of our weekly segment as well. Well, that's all we have for the week, folks. We hope you have a great week, and don't forget, we're your one-stop shop for hearing women headliners. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got any questions, please reach out to us on our website. You can reach out to us on our social media. And again, if you are looking for other women powerhouses to inspire you, to help you get through your day, or you're looking for somebody to just learn from, listen to the Power Lunch, where we bring you a number of great women and their stories and the headliners for the week. Have a great week.
This is the EWN Radio Network.